Good evening and welcome to the Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Busta. Today is a very special day. The Giants are playing in the wild card game live right now. At this moment, I'm going to update you. The bottom of the third just ended and is still tied 0-0. Madison Bumgarner is pitching for the Giants. Edison Volquez is pitching for the Pirates, and both of them have their stuff going tonight. Bumgarner has pitched three innings, allowed one hit, no runs, no walks, and four strikeouts, while Vasquez has pitched three innings, two hits, one walk, and one strikeout. And for the Giants, we have Joe Panik getting his first career postseason hit. We have Pablo again with getting a hit, another hit, and that is about it. And Brandon Crawford has walked. So right now there is not much offense going on from either side, so let's see how this turns out. I am going to keep you updated through this whole live broadcast. I'll keep going. I will tell you what happens in this game. So first I want to talk about this game, who's playing, who's not. We all know Michael Morris is not playing. He is still out with a back injury. So Ishikawa is playing left field, which is a very interesting move. We could have done a whole different type of thing. We could have gone with Juan Perez, who's more of a speed bat, but he's not a very good hitter. But Ishikawa has been hitting well for the Giants, been playing well. You know, he's a solid outfielder. He's usually a first baseman, but, you know, today he's playing left field, which he can do and has done in the past. I just want to talk about, again, the loss of Angel Bagan. It's a huge loss. He's out. He had surgery last Thursday, and we are definitely going to miss him, but we really need Gregor Blanco, the White Shark, as he's nicknamed by himself, and the Giants call him that. He has to step up and become a player that is, you know, out there, speedy, getting hits, getting on base, taking long counts, making these pitchers work, because without that leadoff hitter that is able to do that, then the rest of our offense can kind of work off that and play off that. You know, you got Panik in the two hole. He's just such a clutch hitter. You know, he can go up the middle to each side. You know, he's hitting base hits, moving runners over. That's what you want a second baseman to. We hope he's the Marco Scudero of 2014. Let's talk about a little bit about last night's game and how that has impacted the Giants game today. Last night, let's talk, went 12 innings. The Kansas City Royals won 9-8. Terrific game. The A's were up 7-3 late after the sixth, and Kansas City came back and was playing small ball. They were bunting, stealing bases, getting people on, running. They're Dyson, this amazingly fast outfielder for Kansas City, bottom of the ninth, down by one with one out. He's on second base and steals third, which is unprecedented. You just do not make that second out at third, because then you don't have anyone on, and that's a third of your outs already just by stealing a base. You know, you only have three outs in the bottom of the ninth, so really that was a huge risk. And I know that the coach for Kansas City didn't call it. It was a green light. You know, he can steal whenever he wants. In his career, he was, what, 9 for 10 stealing third base, so he had 90% stolen base, which is outstanding. Soto, the catcher for the A's, got hurt earlier in that game, and they had to bring in Derek Norris, who's an absolute great hitter, but he just has no arm. So they took advantage of him. They had 7 stolen bases total. They have 4 sacrifice bunts. And, you know, this is kind of reminds me of the Giants back in 2010 and 2012. We were never a power-hitting team. Yes, we do have power, but we're more of a small ball team. Get it done. And the A's proved last night that you can't win it by long ball. You have to win it with good bullpen work, because they had Lester pitch 8 innings, 6 2/3 great innings. But, it again, when he's done, you have to have another person follow him up. You have to have another person follow up. You have to have shut down innings, and the A's really didn't. A's just ended up disappointing second half of the season with a disappointing loss. Very sad. We all thought then they were going to be way better than they were coming after the All-Star break. I thought they would have, you know, they'd be in the first divisional round with the first overall, best overall record, but the Angels just absolutely took that away from them. The A's hit a free fall. And now look what they are. They are fishing and playing golf. But we also want to talk about how the Giants came out and showed their lineup of who's active for the roster. So for this game, you could activate whatever players you want. There's 25 players that we can have on the bench. So we activated. So we don't obviously wouldn't keep all of our starting pitchers because this is a one game series. After this game, if we do win, we can readjust our lineup and we could become have more pitchers and different players on it. So today was interesting that we included Gary Brown, which is he's a minor league player brought up in September, known for his quickness, plays center field, great defender. But, you know, maybe late in the game, we need somebody on second base. You know, we're down one run. We need to score. We need somebody fast on second base. There you go. There's Gary Brown. That is exactly what we'll need him to do. You know, back in the day, base hit for Pablo Sandoval, his second hit of a game. Sorry for that interruption, but I'm going to keep you live updated. I am following it live. So I just want to make sure you all know what's going on. And also for this A's game, you know, went 12 innings. They didn't have their best starting pitchers on activated, so they couldn't use them in the long inning situations. And that's why the Giants took advantage and saw what the A's did wrong and brought it onto themselves to make sure that didn't happen to them. So that's why Jake Peavy is on our active roster today. Lensa comes on our roster. Petit is on our roster today, so you could see all those guys. You know, Bum's pitching absolutely wonderful through three already, so let's hope that he can carry this for as long so we can just use our regular bullpen and don't have to use anyone else. But this is a one-game wild card. This is win or go home. You got to do whatever you possibly can to win this game. And without, you know, there's no without. You got to do everything. You got to go all out. I want to talk about Joe Panik starting at second base, his first postseason start. I've already talked about he's got a base hit. He's just cool, calm, and collective Joe. He really is just a very, you know, easygoing. Oh, another base hit for Hunter Pence. Pablo Sandoval moves to second. All right, so Giants have first and second, no out, and Hunter Pence at not Hunter Pence at the plate. It is Brandon Belt. So 2-1, no out. What do the Giants do here? Do you bunt him over? No, you don't bunt him over with Brandon. He's too much of a power hitter. But we would like them to move over. We would love to get a run. I really hope looks like a good inning. No outs, first and second. You got to take advantage of these spots in playoffs. These spots come very rarely, and you really need to capitalize on all the scoring opportunities you have because in the playoffs, every score counts. You saw last night, A's didn't score enough. They came back. Every score counts. You want to score early and often. And right now, this is our best opportunity of the game. All right, I was talking about Joe Panik before Hunter Pence got that hit. Joe Panik, cool, calm, cool Joe. He is a very, you know, he's a rookie, but he looks like a veteran. He looks like nothing fazes him. He got up there, slapped a base hit, his second at bat. He just has something. He has the it factor. He has what it takes to be a ball player. He has what it takes to be somebody who's an everyday player, second baseman. He's not a power guy. He's never going to hit 20 home runs, 100 RBIs, but that's not what you need from your second hitter and your second baseman. You need a consistent get on, move people over, get people into scoring positions for those 3, 4, 5 your big boys hitting next. And I just think that he's young and he can develop into something way better than just a singles hitter. He can hit doubles. He'll be able to develop a routine. The sky's the limit for him. When you come in and start 72 games and just hit .304, that's just amazing, amazing for the Giants. Really found a guy in the rough. You know, before the season, no one really knew who he was. You know, they have those Scouting America, the top 100 best prospects, which are players in the minor league who have not come up to the major leagues, and those are what the scouts and ESPN scouts think they're the best. But he wasn't even on that list. And look, he's up there with top rookies. He was up there for Rookie of the Year. You know, he did not play as many games, so it's a little different. But he has had one heck of a year, and he is just proving his worth to the Giants. And maybe we found the second baseman for the future, another position where the Giants then do not have to go pay somebody in next season to fill in. We can save all that money for left field if Michael Morris doesn't come back. Okay, count is 2-2 to Brandon Belt, 2-1, Pablo at second, Hunter Pence at first. Edison Valquez is pitching. He's already had 51 pitches in three innings. It's a lot of pitches, you know. But again, this is a wild card game. The Pirates have many pitchers activated. They can use whoever they want. But again, it would be great to get him out of the bullpen, great him off the mound, because then you never know who's coming. You know, the bullpen, this guy might have an off day, or it's a playoff game. He might be nervous, which, again, if you're nervous, I've talked about this last week, nervous, adrenaline rolling, you know, you leave the ball up. And if you leave the ball up, that's where hitters love it. That's where hitters take advantage of it. Okay, full count for Brandon Belt, who took a walk last at bat. Let's see if he can do it again. A walk is as good as a hit right now, because Pablo's at second, you know, and the Pirates have absolute cannons in the outfield. They got Harrison, they got McCutcheon, and then they got Castro? Yeah, Starlin Castro. These guys have absolute cannons. Any of them could throw you out at any time. So right now I wouldn't send Pablo if we got a base hit, but let's see. Tim Flannery, you know, the Giants' great third base coach, so energetic, so aggressive. He always runs down the third baseline with the players, cheering them on, trying to get, like, waving them home. It's a great, great thing to watch. If you ever watch a Giants game and you see a base hit, somebody's trying to score for a second, watch the third base coach. Watch how enthusiastic he is. Watch how big he looks. Oh, and Brandon Belt walked. So base is loaded for the Giants and no out. Oh, my God. This is a great, great opportunity for the Giants. I'm real excited right now. Sorry, I might be a little too giddy because this is very close to my heart. I'm a huge Bay Area fan, as you all will know. I've been talking on the radio about it. But, oh, man, to get into the divisional round, oh, I'd be so excited. This one-game playoff is just so, so scary because it's one and done. And that's what kind of segmented me into. Is a wild card game good for MLB? Oh, I think it's wonderful because now instead of giving one team that didn't win their division a chance to play on, you give two teams, and that two teams, they go down 162 games, and they won two wild card, and then they play for that last spot, one game. 162 games go down to one game, and I think that is just the most exciting and fun thing to do. You know, the crowd's pumped up, everyone's pumped up. These games, like the last game, you could walk off to win the series. It is so intense and so awesome. I think it really adds another dimension to the MLB playoffs, which is already one of the best playoffs. You know, there's so much meaning on every game. Look at 2 years ago when the Giants were in the playoffs. They reached elimination six times and never got eliminated, which is crazy. And, you know, maybe this will help them become better in this wild card game because they know what the pressure feels like. They know what win or go home feels like. But again, this is the wild card. Both teams feel wild card playoff. This is both teams feel this way. Both teams want to win. Both teams want to move forward. It's a very, very intense situation, intense game, and MLB just is using it to a great, great situation where they can profit off of this huge game, all these sales, all these TV ratings, and add an extra game. And it's just one extra game, and it only adds a couple extra days to the playoffs. You know, it doesn't because a lot of people's argument is, wow, when is the World Series? Is it going to be, you know, late November? No. You know, they don't want it to be too long because then the MLB season is almost a whole year long. They need the break. So thank God they didn't expand the playoffs to make this a three-game series. Thank God it's a one-game series where win or go home, the most exciting, the most fun, you know. It's a great, great atmosphere, great game. Oh, and Brandon Crawford homered, grand slam. Oh, my God. He hit a deep to deep right. Wow, that is huge. 4-0 Giants. Oh, my God. Oh, this is great. Four runs in the top of fourth. Still no outs, no one on. But that is just great. Putting four runs up like that. Yes, here we go. Here we go. My next segue, I was going to talk about Pence and Pablo, how they really need to hit to propel this Giants team to be the RBI people, to be the people that get on base. You know, we need these players. They are middle of our lineup. This is the meat of our lineup. They need a hit. In the last 2-3 weeks, they've been ice cold. But today, each one of them has a hit, and they both have scored now. So it's great news for the Giants when both of them get on. You know, great things happen. Oh, grand slam, Brandon Crawford. Wow, what an offensive year he's had. You know, he's not known for an offensive player, but he is becoming one. I was hearing a stat driving over here. He hits .313 against left-handed. He's a left-handed batter, which left-handers see the ball better off the right hand, off a right-handed pitcher. But he's hitting .304 against lefties and hitting only .212 against righties. And Valquez is a righty, so that was a pretty impressive shot. He had the same. He had 10 less RBIs than Puig, Brandon Crawford. Let's just put that out there. 10 less RBIs, and he's hitting in the 8-hole, 7-8 hole. That's amazing. That is great. That's what you want your bottom of the lineup to do. Produce 60, 70 runs. That's just extra bonus runs to you because, you know, your team is really built to score runs through 2, 3 through 6, 7, but those bottom two are more of a let's get on base for those big hitters. But you saw him progress from the last 3 years from a guy who just struggles to hit against left-handers to somebody who's now just on it, and look what he's already producing. He's 4-0 in the fourth inning because he hit a grand slam. That's amazing. That's amazing. That's got to be one of his top highlights other than winning a World Series. Hitting a grand slam in a one-game wild card, that's got to be just unbelievable feeling, great adrenaline rush. Oh, he must be going off right now. The whole team, I would love to see how the dugout reacted. You know, we are just such a passionate team. You know, Hunter Pence is the center of our passion, the center of our, you know, spiritual wants and wanting to win. He's the one that gives a speech before the game, explicit speeches that they tape, and people are just, he's just a very emotional person. I was listening to a Giant talk. He said, you don't know what type of speech he's going to give. He's going to give a speech where you think he's going to cry at the end. You think there's a speech where you think he's going to throw a chair against the wall, or you think there's a speech where he's going to come and hug everyone afterwards. He's just, you don't know what type of speech he's going to give, and that is great because you have everyone wanting and waiting to hear that speech and ready to engulf it, ready to take it in, because you have so much emotion, so much fire that you can really, really put energy into other people. And I think that's what he did. And I think that is just what we need. And Hunter Pence is, you know, he might not be the best hitter. You know, in 2012, he did not have a great postseason, but, you know, it was his emotion, his speeches that really helped the Giants drive through the playoffs and win the World Series. But I would like to see more than just his speeches. I would love to see him hit, and he's proven it so far. He's got a hit, and he scored a run. So, all right, the Giants just went 3-out after that home run. Let's see. Travis Easy Crowley grounded out to second base. Madison Bumgarner struck out swinging. And Gregor Blanco, the guy who's replacing Angel Pagan, who must have a great game, I think, to win this game. Grounded out to first. They said, I'm reading some tweets right now about the game, is that there it is, quiet in Pittsburgh after that grand slam. And people, before it was crazy loud, they were all wearing black, all black out, and they had black towels, which really doesn't work if you think about it. You're all wearing black and swinging black towels. You can't really see the towels. You got to make it contrast colors, but you know, they're trying to do their thing. This is only their second playoff appearance in 17 years. You can't ask too much for them. Last year, they also made the wild card, but they lost in the wild card game to Cincinnati. But this is great. You know, you saw last night, Kansas City was so quiet during the sixth inning. So quiet and so calm because they were down 7-3. But all of a sudden, they come back, and it just gets so loud. It gets even more loud because, you know, when you're leading the whole time, you know, people are loud, and they get tired. But if you're losing, people are quiet, and they build up that momentum. People will start to get real excited, get real loud. So now the Giants, this is what you have to do. You have to score early. They have. And you have to keep scoring, and you have to have good pitching. You can't have pitching. You can't let them have chip away at it. You can't have them 2 runs, 3 runs. You have to have shutdown innings. After you score, you must have a shutdown inning. And this is important. I mean, this is what Bumgarner is known for. He's known for his shutdown innings. He's known for coming in after the Giants have scored and putting a stop to whatever is we score runs. The next inning, if they score, we lose some of the momentum. But if a pitcher goes out there, 1, 2, 3 mows them down, then it is our momentum increases, and then we are more offensive next at bat. And it just, I just love it when Bumgarner's on the hill, because you just know that he can shut them down, and he just has such filthy pitches and so many different ways of throwing them. He's just an ace, a 24-year-old ace. Yeah, I said it. He's 24 years old. He is an absolute stud. He's our ace, hopefully our ace for the rest of his big league career, because he's a young country boy, ready to throw strikes, ready to go after anyone. You know, he's not afraid of anyone. He'll pitch to you, whoever. If it's McCutchen, you know, that last year's MVP, who cares if there's two people on? I'm going to try to strike you out or get you out. And that's the way that Bumgarner is. And that's the way that Bumgarner feels and acts and shows his confidence. He's done this since he was 20 years old, when he pitched for the 2010 Giants and won World Series in Game 6. He pitched, seven shutout innings as a 20-year-old? There's just no... This man doesn't show any emotions. This is the most high-intensity situation, and he doesn't show any emotion. It's just unbelievable. How would I would be all over the place? You know, my emotions, my adrenaline would be pumping. I would be so nervous, don't want to make any bad pitches, but he goes out there and just delivers. Just absolutely delivers. Okay, after this break, I'm going to continue talking about the Giants. I'll update you about what happened. Actually, Bumgarner just struck out Mercer, so that's his fifth strikeout of the game. I'll keep talking about it. I'll keep talking about this matchup. I'll keep talking about Volquez, about how he's faced against the Giants, who the Giants have to watch out for. And then I'm going to talk about the Niners in the segment after that. So keep listening, and I will be back in a few minutes. Thank you very much. No mistake, I'm a fool, yeah. Baby, I'm just a fool, yeah.
This is a world premiere. I done been through a whole lot. Trial, tribulation, but I know God. Satan wanna put me in a bow tie. Pray that the holy water don't go dry. Yeah.
Welcome to your Bosco Break. As you may know, we live in the age of computers, but few of us really know who invented them. Because most of the pioneers were part of collaborative teams working in wartime secrecy, they aren't as famous as Edison, Bell, or Morse. But one genius, the English mathematician Alan Turing, stands out as a heroic, tragic figure, and he's about to get his due in a new movie, The Imitation Game, starring Benedict Cumberbatch, which won the top award at the Toronto Film Festival earlier this month and will open in theaters in November. The title of the movie refers to a test that Turing thought would someday show that machines could think in ways indistinguishable from humans. His belief in the potential of artificial intelligence stands in contrast to the school of thought that argues that the combined talents of humans and computers working together as partners will always be more creative than computers working alone. Despite occasional breathless headlines, the quest for pure artificial intelligence has so far proven disappointing. But the alternative approach of connecting humans and machines more intimately continues to produce astonishing innovations. As the movie about him shows, Alan Turing's own deeply human personal life serves as a powerful counter to the idea that there is no fundamental distinction between the human mind and artificial intelligence. Turing displayed a trait that is common among innovators. In the words of his biographer Andrew Hodge, he was slow to learn the indistinct line that separated initiative from disobedience. He taught himself early on to keep secrets. At boarding school, he realized he was homosexual, and he became infatuated with a classmate who died of tuberculosis before they graduated. During World War II, he became a leader of the teams at Bletchley Park, England, that built machines to break the German military codes. Feeling the need to hide both his sexuality and code-breaking work, Turing often found himself playing an imitation game by pretending to be things he wasn't. He also wrestled with the issue of free will. Are our personal preferences and impulses all predetermined and programmed, like those of a machine? These questions came together in a paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence, that Turing published in 1950. With a schoolboy's sense of fun, he invented a game, one that is still being played and debated. To give meaning to the question, can machines think? He proposed a purely empirical definition of artificial intelligence. If the output of a machine is indistinguishable from that of a human brain, then we have no meaningful reason to insist that the machine isn't thinking. On June 7, 1954, Turing committed suicide by biting into an apple he had laced with cyanide. He had always been fascinated by the scene in Snow White in which the wicked queen dips an apple into a poisonous brew. He was found in bed with froth around his mouth, cyanide in his system, and a half-eaten apple by his side. Now, was that something a machine would have done? That's all fair.
Lives a battle between pride and shame, but I've misplaced that sense of pride. This crown of thorns is perched atop my spine.
Welcome to another Bosco Break. From the outside looking in, life of a college athlete seems to compare to the lifestyle of the rich and famous. Seems that a normal day for a college athlete includes automatic A's from professors, trainer massages, and free everything. Although the free shirts that are required to sweat through 6 days a week are pretty great, a normal day inside the life of a student athlete during season looks a little more like this. You wake up to the sound of your blaring alarm at 5 a.m. to roll over and look outside, just to make sure the sun hasn't come up yet and you are not late. Head to the bathroom to complete your morning rituals, then return to the bedroom to get dressed for your morning workout. Before walking out, you gather your three bags: the drawstring workout bag that holds your shoes and equipment, the bag that has your change of clothes for the day, and finally, your backpack that includes your schoolwork and computer. As you walk out, you grab a protein bar and banana to hold you over for the next 6 hours of the day. Finally, you open the door to be greeted by the brisk January morning colds. It's 5:30 a.m. 15 minutes and a long chilly walk later, you arrive at the gym. In the locker room, you and your other teammates strip the sweats you are wearing and grab the binders coach has required you to carry around. After that, you make your way to the training room to do some preventive stretches and get your ankles taped. The clock strikes 5:45 a.m. and it's time to hit the court. "If you're not 15 minutes early, you're late," coach always says. Begin team stretches and loosen your muscles before you get driven into the ground now. Practice went over. 2 hours later, sweaty, exhausted, and late for class, you run to the locker room to change and head to your first class of the day. Sitting in your 8 a.m. class after a workout can make your eyes a little heavy. The decision between taking a quick snooze or listening to the material that your professor is spewing is becoming a struggle. Finally, after two dreadful lectures, you are free for an hour to grab some lunch. For most athletes, outside of dinner, lunch is the highlight of the day. After lunch, it's right back to the classes for some more lecture and occasionally a video relief. When classes are done at 3, coach requires study hall hours to make sure you are keeping up with your homework. Hour and a half of homework. Check. Since you are already back in the gym team room, might as well get some extra shots up while you're here, right? You got lost in the fun part. Losing yourself in game? Oh, and in time. It's 6:30 p.m. You hurry to the dining hall before it closes, stuffing as much pasta and chicken onto your plate that will fit. After almost swallowing your plate whole, you head back to your room to digest and relax before the second practice of the day. While laying on the bed checking Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter feeds, you debate on taking a 20-minute nap. Knowing you're going to wake up groggy, you avoid the stress of not being able to play to the best of your ability and decide to head out to practice early. Arriving at the gym, you're forced to wait for the other athletic teams to finish up with their gym time. As they clear out of the weight room, you look at the clock and realize it's 8 p.m. Go time. After pumping iron for an hour straight, it takes a toll on your body. Head back to the training room now and get some ice on those muscles. As you're waddling back to your room with ice strapped to your knees, you call a fellow classmate to meet you at home to study for that anatomy quiz tomorrow morning. After walking through your door at 9:30 p.m., you can't wait to get in a hot shower and rinse the long day off. You get out to find your classmate waiting for you and immediately start studying. 12 a.m., and you finally get to crawl into bed. Setting your alarm for 5 a.m., you pull up Netflix to watch Sons of Anarchy, but fall asleep before it ends, knowing it'll all happen again tomorrow. The glory of it? You wouldn't have it any other way. That's your Bosco Break. Thanks for listening. Back to the show.
Welcome back to Banter by the Bay. We were just at break, and I will tell you, update you what happened in the Giants game. We had Bumgarner was pitching. It was only half inning that went by. He walked McCutchen, but then got out. Their catcher, Russell Martin, former Dodger. So, you know, any former Dodgers we have to hate. No good. Then he struck out the next person after that. So the Giants are up 4-0 at the end of fourth, so top of the fifth, and we'll keep on rolling. So hopefully we can keep on going. That's what I was talking about before the break, the shutdown inning, how important the shutdown inning. That's exactly what Bumgarner did right here. He got in, boom, 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 you know, other than the walk to McCutchen, who can draw those walks because he can foul off any pitch anywhere. He can hit any ball anywhere. He can hit the ball from his eyes to the bouncing in the dirt. So, you know, sometimes things don't work out for so well. But he walked, you know, and we limited the damage. That's all you can really ask for. So this is Bumgarner's line through four. He's pitched four innings, allowed one hit, one walk, and five strikeouts. Here's Volquez's line. Four innings, five hits, four runs, two walks, two strikeouts, and a 9.00 ERA, which is huge for those who don't know about baseball. You would like to keep your ERA around 2 to 3 per game. So let's that's not very good, but Bumgarner's a zero ERA because he hasn't even let up any runs. And they have sticked with Volquez. He's going to pitch the fifth, which is interesting to me because, you know, this is a one game wild card. I've been harping on this the whole day so far. You have this opportunity to pitch as many pitchers as you want because this is a do or die. So if I was a manager, if I had any pitcher in trouble, you know, Volquez walked two people already. He's already thrown up to close to 65 pitches. Come on, just move on. You have your other starters. You can have and your relievers. You could just pitch your best pitchers right now because right now what the Pirates need is to shut us down, which I hope doesn't happen. But, you know, they need to keep on shutting us down. Do not let us expand this lead. You know, don't let us put any more pressure onto them. But, you know, this is what they want. Clint Hurdle, the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, wants him to stick. You know, he's sticking with one of his aces. You know, it's funny, Edison Volquez last year played for the Dodgers and the Padres, and he had an ERA above 6, which is awful, for the whole year, and he was released, and he picked up by the Pirates, and he was a hidden gem for them. He came in, he had an ERA under 2 for most of this year, can't win in a bunch of games. Joe Panik just grounded out to second base, one out for the Giants in the top of the fifth. He was really a fifth starter, maybe a spot starter. A spot starter is a starter who comes in if a starting pitcher is hurt. But he came in, he's a second pitcher. You know, this is one of the real reasons why the Pirates are where they are today, is they found this guy, and he's just been an absolute stud. To find a pitcher like that who's been off the radar because he's been awful, or, you know, maybe he had some mechanical issues. Something could have been the issue, but I guess he found the place. You know, you find the right team, you find the right pitching coach, and you really can click into something. And he's probably wanting to stay with the Pittsburgh. It's kind of the situation with Vogelsong 3 years ago now for the Giants. You know, he was bouncing around. He was in Japan for a while. He wasn't really sticking with any team. And then he comes to the Giants, and his first season as a Giant, he was the fourth starter, and he just lit everyone up. He was just hitting his corner. You know, that's what happens. Sometimes you just find the right situation, and that really can help a ball player. You know, he found Dave Rigetti. Dave Rigetti is the Giants pitching coach. He's been the Giants pitching coach for almost 2 decades now, almost as long as I've been watching the Giants play. And, you know, you see what he does with the pitchers. You know, he grooves them. He makes them into, you know, he doesn't force them to be something that they're not. He takes what they're good at and intensifies and makes that way better. You know, Vogelsong was never a power pitcher. He was always a finesse, hit the corners, you know, the corners of the plate, you know, the strike zone, the very outer parts of the strike zone. And then he developed that. He was like, yeah, if this is what you want to do, maybe you should take some more off your fastball. You don't have to throw it as hard. Just try to location is the real important part. And then you look at Dave Rigetti, what he does with Madison Bumgarner. There's not much there that he has to work with. You know, he's just an awesome all-star pitcher, but he's young. He was immature, not really, like, he didn't show his immaturity like how Puig did or how Hanley Ramirez did when he was younger, or Giancarlo Stanton. He showed his immaturity by getting angry at himself on the mound. He didn't get angry at anyone else. He didn't get frustrated at the coach and didn't talk bad about to the media or anything like that. You just saw him early in his career get angry at himself and become more and more, you know, feeling like everything that he did was because he made a mistake. But now you see him, and he just pitches great. The only time I've seen that really come back is last week, and I talked about when he went up against Puig and he hit that guy. You know, I talked about it last week again. I would love to see that fight, but we can't have that because Bumgarner is way too important to our franchise. Don't want to see him get hurt. Don't want to see anyone get hurt. This is baseball. This is sports. This is supposed to be for our entertainment. This is what I call men's reality TV, which is funny because, you know, all these girls love watching Real Housewives of whatever or the next OC. I don't know really what any of those shows are, but they follow it religiously. And, you know, I talk to them. I'm like, oh, I follow baseball religiously. I follow about what the players do on and off the field. I follow their personal life. You know, you read every day when you read ESPN or we read Twitter, you see all these facts about sports, about baseball, about football. And it is really just a huge entertainment business. And it's just so much fun to follow, so much fun to be a part of. You know, we become part of the team, you know. I spend so many hours of my life watching the Giants, watching the Niners, watching the Warriors, reading articles about them, watching, you know, pregame, postgame shows, that it's just, I spend so much time, I become so involved in these teams. I really feel, you know, like you're a part of this team. You know, I grew up in this area. I've loved this team for so long. You really want to be, you're passionate, you know, and it's so fun to see us succeed. I mean, right now, 4-0, up top of fifth. You know, it's not over by any means, but you know, it feels good. It feels like I have such a rush right now, being up by 4 in a playoff game. It's just something that nothing else really can give me. You know, that's such an excitement, an excitement that I can't control. That's what I really love. It's out of my control. I can only react to what's happening on the field. I can only react to how the players play or what the coach's decisions are. And then I can make my own opinion about it. That's why I love sports. And that's especially why I love Bay Area sports, is because people here are so open about it, so talk about it. You listen to KNBR, people are all calling in, talking. You'll have so many different views. And if everyone has different views, then you can come and talk and you find out things that you never really thought about before or never really understood before, or you see it from a different side. You know, maybe seeing it from like the Giants and from a Dodgers position. You know, watching the Dodgers from the Giants position, all the Giants fans should hate the Dodgers with a passion. You know, there are rivals. You want them to lose every game they possibly play. You know, I want them to get swept in the playoffs. I don't – if the Giants don't make it, then my next goal is the Dodgers to get swept in the playoffs. And if that doesn't happen, just to lose. If they won the World Series, I would be extremely, extremely distraught. I could not handle seeing them parade around holding that trophy. That ESPN, you know, ESPN in their New York and LA coverage is just awful. They have the crazy bias because they have their offices in the East Coast and they have an office in LA. They have a sports center in LA, so LA gets all the attentions. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Dodgers, the Angels. Angels are not bad, but the Dodgers, oh man, they just get way too much publicity for really not being as good as they should be. They spent $240 million last year. How are they not as good as... How are they not the best team in the league? They have all the top talent. And it just shows. That just really shows. It's like what the A's did. They got more talent. Do they need more talent? No. Do they have the best record without that talent? Yes. But they got rid of their best hitter, and you see what happens. Going back to the Dodgers on how much I hate them, you know. We were raised as kids that go to Dodgers game, BLA, driven into our heads, even from the Warriors games, Giants games. You just know that LA is our huge rival. We just always want to beat them. That blue really gets under my skin. I really do not like that shade of blue. But, you know, again, it would be fun to see the Giants versus the Dodgers, and I guess it would be for the National League Championship series, which would be just so much fun. But I would have a tough time seeing us win that series because they just have our number. Kershaw, Greinke, both of them. I think Greinke was 5-0 against the Giants this year, which is just crazy. 5-0 with a under 2 ERA, which is phenomenal. Anything under 2, that means the other team's only scoring maximum of 2 runs, which is just unreal. You know, you can't win games with just scoring 2 runs. That Dodgers team has so much offensive power. Puig, Kemp, Gonzalez, Hanley, Crawford, Ethier. Oh, I can just keep going and naming and naming. All right, I'm going to give a live update from the Giants game. It looks like the Giants went out in order, 1-2-3 in the top of the fifth, and now we're in the bottom of the fifth. And Madison Bumgarner, who has 47 pitches starting of the inning, is pitching to Neil Walker. Neil Walker for today is 0-1 with one strikeout. It's going to be Neil Walker, Sanchez, and Schneider. They're bottom 6, 7, and 8 hitter, so hopefully he can shut these guys down. As I said before, you know, this is not considered a shutdown inning, but I would consider it as important because it's, again, we're a 4-0 lead. You want to keep it, you want to keep that distance as far as possible. So you want to keep that 4-0 lead. You know, if they get a run, then it's, again, it's a 3. It's easier for them. It's only have to have 2 people on to score. So it can happen at any time. A home run can tie it. But at 4 is a great number because a grand slam really is the only way for them to score those 4 runs off of one swing. And it's hard to get the bases loaded. It's, grand slams is a very, very rare thing, which is crazy why we got when we got one. I think last playoffs we got one, we were, yes, it was Buster Posey hit a grand slam against, I think it was St. Louis? Yeah. Yes, St. Louis in the NLDS, which was a crazy game. Game 7, I think that was, yeah, in St. Louis. Buster Posey hit that grand slam. Everyone was going crazy. Everyone was going off the wall. Everyone felt the momentum. It's kind of like that today. You know, everyone's feeling that momentum. You're watching the game as a Giants fan, and you're just so excited. You're so pumped up, and you want us to win, keep this lead, and don't relinquish it at all. So the Giants have to watch out for McCutchen, Sterling Marte, and the former Dodger, Roysel Martin. Those three are their meat of their lineup. Like I was talking about, our meat of lineup, Pence, Posey, and Pablo. So those three are their big hitters, their cow horn. You know, they really make this offense go. And then they have Starling Marte at top of the one of the top of the lineup. He's get on the base for, he gets on base for McCutchen and Roysel Martin. He's a strong runner, so he's able to stretch singles into doubles. He's able to stretch doubles into triples. He's able to tag up from home. He's able to, you know, do anything on the base, but steal bases, steal second, steal third. So it's, we have to be careful. You just really do not want them to get on base at all. And Bumgarner records his 6th strikeout of the game, with that was striking out Neil Walker, who's struck out for his 2nd time already. And Bumgarner is just dealing right now. He's pitched 5 1/3 innings and only pitched 52 pitches, which is he's averaging around 12 pitches an inning, which is exactly where you want to be. You want to throw about 75 to 80 pitches by the 7th inning. More than that, you can throw up to 95, and it's still good. You want your starter to go 7-8 innings deep. That's a great start. And you know, if he keeps pitching like this, you know, don't take him out. You don't want to take any risk. Maybe somebody in the bullpen is, like I talked about earlier, nervous, has too much adrenaline going. You know, this could be their first postseason appearance. So if he's rolling, keep on going with him. And that's the opposite for the Pirates. If Vulcas is not going, pitch somebody else. Why risk having him get lit up for more runs? Why not go into your bullpen? You have a 1-game playoff. You have 25 players, probably 10 pitchers. How do you can go and adapt. You can go in and find somebody else, maybe another starter. They have a couple of their starters available to use. They have a couple of long relievers that have been dominant this year to use. So I'm very confused. We'll probably see a pinch hitter if Vulcas gets back up. We'll probably see a pinch hitter for him because we're going to be in the 6th soon. And that's you know, they only have 9 more outs after this. So they really need to think about what they're going to do and how they're going to approach it. So this is a very, very interesting mind game. You know, baseball is just not go out there and play. It's a complete chess game. It's matching up left-handed hitters versus right-handed pitchers. You know, if you have 3 left-handed batters coming up, you're not going to throw in a right-handed pitcher. You're going to go in and throw in a left-handed pitcher who's harder versus left-handers. It's a chess game, these managers, and that's why I'm so confident in Bruce Bochy, a 2-time World Series champion. He's where he had 55 playoff appearances as a manager, and he's 30-25, which is an absolute great record. He's proven himself. He's going to be a Hall of Fame coach. I believe he should be a Hall of Fame coach. Two World Series with a team that has, you know, not a huge payroll, was not expected to win either of those two series, and really a very, very strong coach who knows the aspect of the game very well. He knows all the little situations, all the little tricks, you know, all the little pitching matchups. He reads details. He knows the scouting report, so he knows the percentages of who versus who, such as, you know, if Bumgarner has against Starling Marte, for example, he's 6-for-19 against Bumgarner, which is a great batting average. He's hit a home run and 4 RBIs, so you don't want to, if there's a situation where Bumgarner comes up against Marte in a late situation with the score closed, maybe you don't pitch Bumgarner. Maybe you go to somebody else. Maybe you go to a left-handed pitcher because he's a lefty. So there's all these different situations. All right, there's two outs, bottom of the fifth. Bumgarner's still dealing 59 pitches. Travis Snyder's a bat with 2 strikes. And after this, after this break, I will give you another live update about what's going on in the Giants game. Can you feel the starlight? You must have the words in that head of yours. And oh, oh, can you feel the silence? I can't take it anymore. Cause it is not enough to be dumbstruck.
Three-minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. A truck dripping rancid juices from thousands of pounds of rotting chicken sat in the heat, attracting flies Thursday at a western Montana truck stop after an Idaho Trucking Company employee abandoned it at least 3 days earlier. The driver left the trailer containing approximately 37,000 pounds of frozen chicken near the Flying J truck stop west of Missoula after the company refused his request for more money, authorities say. The chicken was worth $80,000. Aisha Johnson with the Missoula City County Health Department said Dixie River Insurance Company was in charge of cleaning up the mess, and it's not a simple job. It involves getting the landfill prepared to receive the load, Johnson told the Missoulian on Thursday. They'll probably have to dig a separate hole for this. Move over, Ben Roethlisberger. There's a new number 7 in western Pennsylvania. The folks at Val Wood Farms in Loretto, Pennsylvania, have named a baby calf Big Ben after the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback because the cow naturally has a number 7 on his head. The farm has posted the calf's picture on its Facebook page, and Clarissa Idle-Wetzwerk, the director of business development for the family-owned food and grocery farm, is hoping Roethlisberger won't mind. She says Baby Ben is awfully cute, so hopefully Big Ben won't mind sharing his namesake. The farm plans to display the calf when it opens its pumpkin patch for business next month. Two amorous donkeys, Napoleon and Astucia, who were separated because of an outcry over their lovemaking, have been reunited at a zoo in Poland. The couple, together for 10 years, got into trouble when mothers expressed outrage that children had to witness their mating. A local conservative official, Lydia Duziak, took up their cause and persuaded the director of the zoo to have the animals put in separate pens. Thursday, the zoo acknowledged making a mistake and said the donkeys are again in one pen after about a week apart. The interruption of the long-standing romance turned into a national news item in Poland in the past few days. Nearly 7,000 people signed a petition to have them reunited. 2 fan pages appeared on Facebook devoted to their cause, with a total of nearly 10,000 likes and a photo of donkeys in the act. Experts weighed in, saying the separation could hurt their psychological well-being, and politicians were asked about it on the country's leading news program. In their decade together, Napoleon and Astucia have produced 6 offspring, including their 2-month-old, Tadusi. I'm Harley D, signing off. This is radio.dominican.edu.
Light years away, so out of space, without a trace. Baby, we're gone, baby, we're gone, come on.
All right, welcome back from the break. Now I'm going to change my topic from the Giants to the San Francisco 49ers, who thankfully won last week against the Eagles. Let's talk about Frank Gore first. He had 20 carries, 20 touches of the ball this time for over 150 yards, which is just exactly what we needed. Frank, that's our identity. That's our who we are. We're a running team. Cap is not a solid passer, not so comfortable in the pocket. So how do you make him more comfortable in the pocket? Run the ball. Make the defense respect the run so they can't bring blitzes all the time, so they can't, just pressure our receivers out wide. And, we also saw Hyde a couple carries that game. We were so hot and high on Hyde in the beginning. He needs work. He definitely needs to learn from Frank how to be more north-south runner, which means just you do not want him to cut side to side, because people in the NFL are too fast. The linebackers are just as fast as the running backs, and if you go side to side, they're going to catch you and they're going to take you down for no yards. You have to hit the hole hard, get low like Frank does so they can't see you, bury, push, just drive your feet, get a couple yards each game. You don't have to hit it for a home run every time. You know, the NFL is, if you get a 4 or 5 yard run, 8 yard run, that's great. The possession's going well. You have short down and distance. That's exactly what a running game is supposed to do for an NFL team. It's not like college where you see every game and there's an 80, 85, 199 yard rush every game. That stuff is amateur, as they're amateur athletes. The professional athletes, they are the top of the top. They are the specifically dominant players that just know how to use and be physical and fast, and how to use their skills to stop running backs. So if I was Hyde, I would just have him keep on going north and south. Just no more cuts. People are too fast in the NFL. Let's talk about our defense. The defense looked great. No points allowed. They had 21 points, and because that's two special teams touchdowns we let up. We let up a block punt, and they scored it for a touchdown, which is just unbelievable. Andy Lee looked very lackadaisical on catching the football and kicking it. And then we had a punt return from Darren Sproles that he caught the ball. Hasim Osgood, our gunner, the person on the outside running down the field, grabs his face mask, and then he breaks it. He breaks that tackle, and then he's not touched for another 80 yards. So, we just, our special teams, this is the only real, there's a couple real things that I think we need to work on. I think special teams, we have a great coach, but I think you needed to get a kick in the ass. I think last game was a kick in the ass. We've always had great special teams. I'm not extremely worried about it. I just know that Harbaugh will be on it and get fixed, because, John Harbaugh, Jim's brother, was a special teams coach, so they have kind of a special team, background in their family. So hopefully they can get better. But that defense, wow. Shady McCoy, Sean McCoy, LeSean McCoy, probably best one of the top two running backs in the league, and he just got shut down for nothing. The Niners defense were all over him. They were looking for him. They were covering him. They were spying him. He usually has big game on the ground, on receiving. Him and Darren Sproles, just two quick athletes from the backfield. And the Niners just absolutely found them, shut them down, and did let them do nothing. I mean, the Philadelphia's offense had 200 plus yards, but they had 90 yards in the final drive. They held them to really over only 150 yards total in the whole game. And that is a high powered offense the Eagles have. They come up to the line, as I told you last week, that they run plays within 8 seconds of the play clock. And I said, what do you have to do to beat them? You have to have three and outs, because their defense is just tired because they don't get breaks on the sideline. When your offense is so fast paced and they can't get any first downs, then they're tired because they have to come right back on the field. And that's what we did. We exploited their fast paced offense. We took advantage of their defense because they were tired and they were not ready to get us. And, what was so great was we came back and we showed how we can be a dominant football football team again. We just have to clean up a little mistakes. Our defense had zero, let me say that again, zero penalties, which was crazy compared to, I think it was 9 penalties on the defense last week, and 7 of them were resulting in a first down on a third down. And that's what we did. We forced them to punt. We forced them on turnovers. We had Antoine Bethea, God, a great pickup so far. He was NFL defensive player of the week. He had a pick, and he had a strip fumble. You know, that strip fumble was huge. That was right after Kaepernick threw that pick. The Niners were looking down, you know. If they score there, I think the Eagles are up by three scores. And what the Niners did, and Antoine Bethea, second play, boom, ripped that ball right out of his hands. You know, Parrish Cox caught that ball, stayed in bounds, and just looked great. All right, I have an update for you in the Giants game. Top 6, Hunter Pence walked. The Pirates pulled Volquez, and now Justin Wilson, their reliever, is in, and he is pitching to Brandon Belt with Hunter Pence on first. So, again, I'll keep you updated. There's only 5 more minutes in the show, but I'll talk about the Niners a little more, and then I'll finish up on the Giants. I would like to talk about Kaepernick. I saw an impatient quarterback in the pocket. He needs to become confident. He needs to know, snap, first read's not there, look to the second read. He sits there, boom, looks at the first read, then says, oh, it's not there, then my eyes go down, look at the lineman. He needs to have his eyes up. He's a 6'4 quarterback. He needs to be poised. He can't be scared. He can't be skittish. He can't just run out of the pocket. He has to be aggressive. He has to be more of a cerebral quarterback, a more heady quarterback. He's become a runner, as people call it. He's a person that wants to, you know, get out of the pocket and make a throw out of the pocket, which he makes unbelievable throws, but you can't win games like that. You really can't win games like that. And he called the timeout. There was a play where we're gonna punt. It's 4th and 1. We're trying to draw them off sides. You know, fake snap it so the defense thinks we're gonna run a play and hopefully they jump off sides, but they don't. And just let the clock run out because you know it's a punt. It doesn't really matter if it's 5 extra yards because it actually gives us more room to punt. But then he burns a timeout. That could have burned us in the long run. That really could have burned us in the long run. If we weren't up and if we had to come back. Oh, Giants just scored another run. Sorry, live update. Belt comes through with an RBI single. Pence scores. Wow. And Crawford is the first shortstop to hit a grand slam in postseason history. Wow, that's also a very crazy stat. So thank you, Twitter. Thank you, Henry Schulman. Great follow on Twitter if you want to follow him. It's at Henry Schulman. And I just want, again, you know, Cap needs to be a confident. He needs to be the leader. And, again, I think Frank showed his leadership. Shows, again, we're a running team. We don't have confidence in the passing game yet. We didn't spread the ball. We didn't throw the ball down the field. We know, again, we stuck with the 8 to 10 yard passes, which I don't mind. Don't mind at all. But I would love to see Bruce Ellington run a deep post or a streak down the right hash line. Something to stretch the field. Something to make me feel good. Something to make the fans feel good. Oh, all right. And I will be going to the game this weekend versus Kansas City. Yes, my dad has season tickets, so today, the next week is my turn to go, and I am very, very excited. My first NFL game in Levi Stadium. I've been to plenty of other NFL games. And this week is Alex Smith coming back to San Francisco. This should be very interesting. I am ready to yell and boo Alex Smith. I do like Alex Smith, but, you know, it's always a fun thing to do. I would love to boo, and I would love to see a win. I think that our defense, if they play the way they did last week, there's no chance that they come and put a beat down like they did against New England on Monday night. I just wanted to thank everyone for sticking with me through this Giants game. I know everyone probably wants to watch that Giants game. I wanted to watch the Giants game, but it is more important that I am with you, the people. I cannot wait to be on next week. There's going to be so much sports to talk about. There's going to be the Niners. There's going to be the Giants if they make it. They win the rest of these games, make the playoffs. There's going to be so much good stuff, so much good sports going on. And I would love for you to be with me next week at 6 to 7 on Wednesday nights. Remember, it's Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Bus Stop, and you can hear me live on radio.dominican.edu. Thank you, and I will talk to you next week.